So, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. I keep coming back to these words. I'm sure one or two of you will realize that I've been on something of a Christian odyssey over the last few years. 6 years ago, I was married just there. Faith was a complete mystery to me. 4 years ago, my son was christened in this church. I was still none the wiser. And then 2 years ago, my daughter, Evie, was born. I'll add that wasn't here, that was in the LGI. John Wesley, who founded the Methodist movement when he had his religious epiphany, said he felt his heart strangely warmed. I think I can relate to that. Seeing Evie being born gave me a sense of the preciousness, I think the givenness of life. And so one of the exciting things about this Christian journey has been realizing that faith isn't a bunch of fusty old dogmas, but it's an exciting journey of coming to understand who I am through a relationship with Jesus Christ. But like any journey of self-discovery, it can kind of come with some rather uncomfortable truths. As much as I'd love to think of myself in the footsteps of the great church fathers and the mystics, I think it turns out I have still quite a long way to go. I still spend far too much time fixated on my job, grouchy with the kids, hours on Amazon adding things to my wish list, books that I'll never be able to order, let alone read. Does any of this sound familiar? So this brings me back to give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. There are words that are underlined in my Bible. It was like they were the challenge of my new faith. So it was rather strange when Phil actually asked me to preach for the first time that it would actually be on this very passage. What was Jesus asking of me? Was he asking me to complete my tax return early? He might have been. I didn't think that was the case, though. My wife nags me enough about doing my tax return, and I thought God surely didn't send both Jesus and my wife to pester me about doing my tax return. So, what's actually happening here in the Bible passage? It's about this coin, the Roman denarius. It was a coin especially minted for paying Roman taxes. And it was one of the most charged issues for the Jewish people living under Roman occupation. Should they, the people of God, be paying to support this idolatrous regime with its regime of emperor worship? And Jesus is questioned from people on both sides of the debate. You've got the Pharisees, the religious leaders. They think paying the tax is a really bad idea. But then they seem to have rather strangely cozied up to the Herodians, who are another Jewish sect, who actually rather like the Romans, and they're all in favor of actually paying this tax. But both groups see Jesus as a threat, so they're trying to trap him. If Jesus was the Messiah, then surely he'd say, let's not pay the tax. And if he said that, he'd be a troublemaker, and they'd get him arrested. But if he said, let's pay the tax, then surely his more zealous followers would be disappointed. Usually, payment of your taxes isn't a high priority for revolutionaries. But Jesus, he's quite sly with this. He looks at them and says, has anyone got one of these coins? He doesn't have one. He's like the queen, he doesn't carry cash. He's saying, come on, you lot, I know you pay the tax. You've got one of these coins. So he looks at the coin and he asks, whose image is this? You see up there written in Latin on the coin, Caesar Augustus Tiberius, son of the divine Augustus. I mean, this was deeply offensive to anyone of Jewish faith there was one God, and it wasn't Augustus and his stepson Tiberius. Here he is again. There's a bust. There we go. Tiberius Caesar, the emperor when Caesar was when Christ was crucified. So whose image is this? It's interesting when you really start to become familiar with the Bible, you recognize it kind of echoes across itself. Each passage seems to refer to another one. And it's the same with this one. There's plenty of talk of images. And amazingly, it's actually on the very first page. Right after God has created the world, it says this. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness." So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. It's only a handful of words, but he used the word image 3 times. So what does it mean to be made in the image of God? For one thing, I don't think it means God is a white man with a beard sat on a cloud, as great as that picture is. To be made in the likeness of God, certainly for me, means to mirror God's capacity to love, God's capacity to mourn. That was one of the great discoveries of my faith, realizing that for each of us, there's that little piece of divinity etched inside. We're here as the custodians of his creation. And I think it's when things start to go wrong, when we lose sight of our capacity to see ourselves in God's likeness. When Jesus challenges us to give to God what is God's, what's he talking about? What's God's? It's you lot. It's every one of us. I think the issue is when these things start to become confused. Either we get too proud, like Tiberius, thinking we are gods, or we start looking for our identity in the wrong places. Because like then, our lives now are full of images. The occupying forces might have changed, but I think some of the struggles remain the same. Here we go. We all know what power some of the newspapers, the magazines, the television, the internet hold over us. And I think if I was to try to put my finger on one thing, it would be the anxiety that I think these modern idols bring. Our sense of identity, who we are, becomes increasingly reliant on the things we buy and the things we consume. If only I had that subscription to Disney Plus, my life would be complete. I know that's one thing I think. If only I had the latest iPhone. My iPhone's rubbish. It can be anything. Mobile phones, vinyl records, clothes, gardening tools, vehicles, bits of furniture, paintings. Name your poison. And I think it's best summed up by a comment from John D. Rockefeller, who was one of the great industrial barons at the end of the 19th century in America. I think at the peak of his wealth, he owned 90% of all the gas and oil in America. And he was asked, how much is enough? And his answer was, just a little bit more. Isn't that the way we all feel? We're all creatures of desire. And I think in so many ways, this desire has been hijacked by the marketplace, where we yearn for commodities to satisfy our needs. So, let's talk about how distracted we can sometimes get. A little bit of audience participation. Who's got a mobile phone with them? Hold it up. Hold it up high. This is a moment of confession for me. Right. For those who have iPhones, you can do it by going to screen time. If you have an Android device, I think you go to something called well-being, and then It will tell you how much time a day you spend on your phone. Oh, mine's gone down since yesterday. Must have been the nerves of preparing this, actually. I'm at 2 hours 46 for daily usage on my mobile phone. Who can do better than that? Any higher? Am I the biggest user of my mobile phone in this church right now? You're down at 1 hour. You are very well behaved. Yesterday it was telling me I spent 3 hours and 35 minutes a day on my phone. And look, I'm not really complaining about... Anyone else want to confess? You've either got some spectacular numbers out there or you're all absolutely really self-controlled and you all sit around reading books. 4 hours. There we go. There we go. You know, I'm not complaining about new technologies. I mean, with every new wave of technology, people, there's usually a lot of heated language. It's like when the telephone was invented, everyone complained about that. They thought people's heads would explode and we should all get back to writing letters. And I'm sure we might be able to use a lot of these things for great purposes. Maybe you're using Twitter to campaign for the good of the environment. Maybe you're familiarizing yourself with the complete works of Beethoven on Spotify. You know, maybe you're nurturing a long-lasting and deep friendship with someone halfway around the world via Snapchat. But I suspect a lot of people are like me, nervously twitching away, thinking, I need to check Facebook for the umpteenth time today just to see if someone has liked that thing I've posted. Just to get that sense of affirmation, I get that little dopamine hit. Why does no one like my Facebook posts? I don't know. Genius is lost. So it comes back to that, those words of Rockefeller, just that little bit more. So if we go back to the Bible passage, once he's looked at the coin, Jesus says, so give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. He's really saying, if you want the benefit of what the Roman Empire has to offer, the roads, the education, you need to pay the tax. And while he says do pay the tax, importantly, he draws the line at worshipping Caesar. He's really saying, don't confuse these things with what really matters. You are what really matter. You have an opportunity to reflect God's likeness. Yes, you have to live in this world, and to an extent you've got to play by its rules. Jesus isn't expecting us to go and live in caves. Take pleasure in the things the world has to offer, but don't let them give you your sense of who you are. The things of the world, like Caesar's coin, have to be given back. You, however, are made in God's image, so give yourself to him. Let that divinity shine out.